Welcome to the Shortwave Report for January 27, 2012. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's www.outfarpress.com, you can find a schedule for dozens of international broadcasters in English. There you can also listen to the past four shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, NHK World Radio Japan, China Radio International, Spanish National Radio, Radio Havana Cuba, and The Voice of Russia. We'll begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. France has made it a crime to deny that Turkey's eradication of Armenians in 1915 was genocide. The largest oil company in Austria wants to begin so-called clean fracking operations to extract natural gas, but the residents of the area are uniting against it. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
France's upper house of parliament voted late Monday to make it a crime to deny that the killings of Armenians by Ottoman Turks more than a century ago constituted genocide. By doing so, they risk more sanctions from Turkey and complicate an already delicate relationship. Turkey furiously denounced the move, and Justice Minister Sadullah Ergin told CNN Turk Television that it was a great injustice and shows a total lack of respect for Turkey. Most historians contend that the killings of 1.5 million Armenians in 1915 was the 20th century's first genocide.
Residents of a small Austrian town who are about to take on that country's oil giant, OMV. They're against the company's plans to recover shale gas using the controversial extraction process known as fracking. The shortened term, which comes from the longer hydraulic fracturing, has made plenty of headlines in the United States and other parts of the world because of its environmental impact. It has been banned in France, and there have been big protests against it in Bulgaria and other countries in Europe. Kerry Skyring spoke with some fracking foes and proponents in the northern Austrian town of Hahnbaumgarten.
Café Prince is the only place open when I arrive in Hahnbaumgarten. And as the locals gather for coffee and wine, it's not difficult to get them talking about drilling for gas and fracking.
It's obvious that we have to do something for the future. It's not for us, it's for the children. But what's missing here is clarification.
Opinions range from skepticism to outright opposition.
It's said that it will bring jobs, but that's not correct. They'll start boring and we'll get nothing from it except the danger and everything else it brings.
According to Austria's oil giant OMV, the residents of this town and the farms around it are sitting on enough natural gas to meet all of the country's needs for three decades. In one of Austria's poorest regions, that could mean a big boost to the economy. Yet even the mayor of Hahnbaumgarten, Christian Frank, is cautious.
Fracking is a Begriff, der aus den USA nach Europa gekommen ist.
Fracking is a term that has come to Europe from the United States. It's certainly not an exemplary technology, and it has certainly had bad effects on the environment there. So the concept has a negative connotation. OMV is talking to us about clean fracking, in which no chemicals are to be used. What's still to be tested are the other risks.
A wine grape farmer off to tend his vines. This area is known as the Weinviertel, the wine quarter, and produces some of Austria's best wine. The gas lies trapped in rock between 4 and 6 kilometers below these rolling hills. Hydraulic fracturing of the rock is the only way to release and extract it. This involves pumping in millions of liters of water and chemicals under high pressure. In the United States, that's led to groundwater pollution. Professor Herbert Hofstetter from Austria's Montan University says He's working on a new method of fracking.
Basically, the difference is that we are not using this mix of various chemicals anymore. So it's definitely a clean process what we are using, and we are having definitely zero environmental impact. So this is the difference to the existing technology.
U.S. companies such as Halliburton are also working on so-called clean fracking, but little is known about their progress or just how clean it is. And Herbert Hofstetter admits his technology is not yet ready.
We have been working for more than 2 years now on this new fracturing technology, and the lab tests are still ongoing. However, we don't have the final results right now. Anyway, the first results we are having, they are very, very promising indeed.
The Weinviertel is already a major producer of energy, wind energy. Massive wind towers are springing up between the vineyards. As I stand beside one on a hill near Herrn Baumgarten, about the only sound is the soft swish of its blades. Helena Waldner moved here from Vienna a couple of years ago. She came for the rural peace and beauty. Now, she's leading a local campaign to stop the shale gas project. She doesn't believe in clean fracking.
That's a clever strategy developed by the marketing department at OMV. It's a method that absolutely does not exist. It's called clean fracking, but that doesn't mean it's clean.
Along with locals like Helena, environmental organizations such as Greenpeace and Global 2000 are against exploiting the natural gas reserves under the Weinviertel. Johannes Wallmüller is an energy expert from Global 2000 and says even if the so-called clean fracking process is used, he would not support it.
No, we wouldn't support it. But it's also not what they stated until now, because they stated they want to develop it, but they didn't say that they would exclude chemicals at all. They just try to exclude it.
The Austrian government is divided over fracking. The environment minister opposes any form of it. But the economy minister says, let's see what the technology can do. The government is yet to decide on whether OMV can drill. The company is 30% state-owned and influential. The idea of reducing dependency on imported gas from Russia and Central Asia will also have great appeal. Kerry Skyring, Deutsche Welle Radio, Herrn Baumgarten in the northeast of Austria.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, mediacenter.dw-world.de. Next, NHK World Radio Japan. 51 of Japan's 54 nuclear reactors are currently shut down, and there is strong public opposition to restarting them. 10,000 people in the area near Fukushima nuclear disaster are filing a class action lawsuit stating that the current compensation payments are insufficient. World unemployment is expected to exceed 200 million people this year. Japan posted its first trade deficit in 31 years. NHK Japan.
The operator of a nuclear power plant in Shimane Prefecture, western Japan, says it will shut down another reactor for regular inspections. The decision means that 51 of Japan's 54 reactors will be offline. The Chugoku Electric Power Company says it will begin Thursday evening, shutting down Reactor 2 of its Shimane power plant. The work is scheduled to be completed early Friday morning. The plant's only other reactor is already offline for regular checkups. With the addition of the ongoing shutdown, all the nuclear power plants run by the company will be suspended. The company is conducting stress tests on its reactors, a prerequisite for deciding whether to resume operations. But protests from local government mean that there is still no indication whether the company can restart its reactors. The Shimane prefectural government and the local municipality insist that the utility should first thoroughly examine last year's nuclear accident in Fukushima and seek more understanding of local residents.
Around 10,000 people from an area in a no-entry zone around the stricken Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant are preparing to file suit to seek more compensation from the Tokyo Electric Power Company. Recently, residents of the Odaka district in Minami Soma City, Fukushima Prefecture, decided to file a class action suit with the governmental organization set up to mediate disputes with TEPCO for damages. They insist the current payment from the utility is insufficient. On Sunday, about 30 representatives of the districts gathered to discuss procedures for filing the claim. They say preparation for pursuing further reparations will be done district by district. Roughly 12,000 people from the districts are now living as evacuees across Japan. The government settlement body was set up last August. It has so far accepted about 660 cases. This will be the first time for some 10,000 people to file a class action suit with the organisation. An official from the organisation said it will study ways to conduct negotiations to settle the case swiftly.
The International Labour Organization says the number of unemployed people around the world will likely rise beyond 200 million this year for the first time ever. The ILO says in a report released on Tuesday that the number in 2011 was 197 million, with the jobless rate dipping 0.1 percentage point to 6%. But the report says that despite the slight improvement, about 27 million jobs had been lost worldwide since 2007. It also says the jobless rate among young people was especially high at 12.7% and that many youth only have temporary jobs. The UN organization predicts that the number of jobless people could reach 202 million this year due to Europe's credit crisis. The ILO calls for concerted global efforts to contain Europe's debt problems to help improve employment conditions worldwide.
Japan posted its first trade deficit in 31 years in 2011, due largely to the impact of the March earthquake, tsunami, and Fukushima nuclear plant accident. The Finance Ministry said in its preliminary report on Wednesday that Japan marked a trade deficit of 2.5 trillion yen, or $32.1 billion, last year. Imports rose 12% and exports fell by 2.7%. The deficit is attributed in part to a drop in exports of automobiles and other products due to supply chain disruptions caused by the March disaster. The nuclear accident also led to a jump in imports of liquefied natural gas used by thermal power plants. Exports also declined because of the yen's strength against other currencies and a slump in the global economy stemming from the Eurozone credit crisis.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan, heard from 9 to 9:30 p.m. at 6110 on the shortwave, or on the web at www.nhk.or.jp. All the times I'm announcing are for Pacific Standard Time, so adjust them to your time zone. On to China Radio International. A settlement was reached between Chinese fishermen and ConocoPhillips over an oil spill that covered 6,000 square kilometers off the northeastern coast of China. Thousands gathered in Egypt on the one-year anniversary of the overthrow of President Mubarak, while an equal number of people protested the current regime. China Radio International.
China National Offshore Oil Corporation and ConocoPhillips China have reached an agreement to settle compensation claims from oil spills off northeastern China last June. Under the agreement, Conoco is set to pay 1 billion yuan, that's nearly 160 million US dollars, to settle the claims of potentially affected fishermen in Bohai Bay communities. 10% of the money will go to the company's fund to improve fishery resources in the region. More than 100 Chinese fishermen filed a lawsuit last year over the oil spill, seeking compensation from ConocoPhillips China for damage to their sea cucumber catches. The oil spill covered around 6,000 square kilometres of water surface. Thousands of Egyptians had gathered in Tahrir Square to mark the one-year anniversary of the uprising that led to the toppling of former President Hosni Mubarak.
We wish that all the Egyptians become one and forget their differences. Egypt today lives in happiness.
However, whilst many were commemorating the anniversary, others took to the streets to call on the military council, which is now leading Egypt, to immediately step down.
Protester Maher Mohammed Abd al-Hakim said the revolution hasn't ended yet. All that's happened is the increase of the number of martyrs and injured, and the number of those who have been tried in military court reached 16,000. The anniversary and renewed protests come as Egypt's first democratically elected parliament in 60 years held its first session this week. Egypt's military ruler has also lifted a decades-long state of emergency in the country.
Those reports were from China Radio International, heard from 4 to 5 p.m. at 11970 and from 6 p.m. to 11 at either 9790, 6020 or 6190 or on the web at english.cri.cn. Next, Spanish National Radio. The new right-wing government in Spain is charging Judge Garzón for investigating the Franco regime's crimes against humanity. The Syrian government accused the Arab League and the West of flagrant interference in internal affairs. Spanish National Radio.
Garzón, amigo, el pueblo está contigo. Garzón, amigo, el pueblo está contigo. Garzón, amigo.
Relatives of victims from the Spanish Civil War and the Franco dictatorship that followed the Civil War, demonstrating outside the Supreme Court in Madrid this morning as the trial was about to begin of Spain's highest profile judge, Baltasar Garzón, who stands accused of violating a 1977 amnesty law by investigating Civil War and Franco-era crimes. It's the second of three prosecutions that Mr. Garzón is currently undergoing. Last week, he was tried for breaking the law by authorizing recordings of suspected criminals and their lawyers in jail. The Supreme Court has still to give its verdict in that case. The prosecution in the trial starting today was brought by two right-wing groups. They say Mr. Garzón overstepped his powers by opening an investigation into the disappearance of more than 100,000 people between 1936 and 1975. Judge Baltasar Garzón became internationally famous when he indicted the late Chilean leader Augusto Pinochet and came within an inch of getting him extradited to Spain from Britain on charges of genocide. The judge says the acts in the Civil War and under the Franco regime were crimes against humanity and so are not subject to amnesty. International human rights groups have described the Supreme Court trial as a scandal. If found guilty, Mr. Garzón could face a 20-year suspension from the bench and a fine of more than 20,000 euros.
Syria has rejected an Arab League call for President Bashar al-Assad to step down and hand over power to his deputy. A government official called the plan flagrant interference in Syria's internal affairs. The Arab League meeting in Cairo urged Syria to form a national unity government with the opposition within 2 months. The UN says that more than 5,000 people have died as a result of the crackdown on protests since they began last March. The League called on both sides to end the bloodshed. The government in Damascus says it is fighting terrorists in armed gangs and claims that some 2,000 members of the security forces have been killed.
The Arab League is divided about what exactly is to be done about Syria. Saudi Arabia said it was pulling out of the League's monitoring mission because Damascus had broken promises on peace initiatives. Monitors have been criticized for failing to stop the violence, while the Arab League ministers said they were extending the mission for another month. Analysts say the Saudi decision has thrown its longer-term future into doubt.
Those reports were from Spanish National Radio, heard from 4 to 5 p.m. at 5970, and podcasting at rtve.es/radio. On to Radio Havana, Cuba. Rebellion against the new government in Libya continues. The United Nations human rights chief has criticized the United States for its failure to close its prison at Guantanamo Bay. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Libyan government forces lost control of a former stronghold of Muammar Gaddafi on Tuesday after local residents staged an uprising, posing the most serious challenge yet to the country's new rulers. Elders in Bani Walid, where militias loyal to the ruling National Transitional Council were driven out in a gun battle a day earlier, said they were appointing their own local government and rejected any interference from the authorities in Tripoli, the capital. Observers say that the town's revolt will heighten doubts in the West about the TNC government's ability to establish order and disarm tribal militias. Reports late Monday night from Bani Walid, a town about 200 kilometers from Tripoli, described armed Gaddafi supporters attacking the barracks of the pro-government militia late Monday night. While local elders denied reports that they were loyal to Gaddafi, who was captured and killed in October, reporters said that they saw several green flags, Libya's national banner during Gaddafi's government, hoisted over the town. The uprising in Bani Walid comes at a time when the National Transitional Council is facing a number of crises. In the past week, its chief has had his office overrun by protesters, angry at the slow pace of reform, and the second most senior official has quit, citing what he described as an atmosphere of hatred. On Tuesday, about 200 elders who gathered in a mosque in central Bani Walid had decided to abolish the appointed military council for the town and appoint their own local council in direct defiance of the authority of the government in Tripoli.
The United Nations Human Rights Chief, Navi Pillay, has spoken out against the failure of the United States to close its prison facility of the U.S. military base at Guantanamo. She also said that Washington must ensure accountability for serious human rights violations, including torture, that took place there. In a news release, Pillay said that it has been 3 years since U.S. President Barack Obama ordered its closure within 12 months, yet the facility continues to exist and individuals remain arbitrarily detained. Ms. Pillay, voicing disappointment that instead of closing the facility, the U.S. government has entrenched a system of arbitrary detention with the new National Defense Authorization Act, signed into law last month. The act now effectively codifies such indefinite military detention without charge or trial. The UN official said that the new U.S. legislation contravenes some of the most fundamental tenets of justice and human rights, namely the right to a fair trial and the right not to be arbitrarily detained. She said that no one should ever be held for years on end without being tried and convicted or released. Navy Pillay said she was also upset by the U.S. government's failure to allow independent human rights monitoring of the detention conditions at Guantanamo.
Those reports are from Radio Havana, Cuba, heard from 2 to 3 p.m. at 11760 and from 4 to 11 p.m. at either 6060, 6010, or 6000. Also streaming on the web from 4 to 11 p.m. at www.radiohc.cu. And now podcasting at World Radio Network, wrn.org. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or would like to make a donation for production cost of this unfunded program, I may be reached through the website or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. I'm grateful for any donations to help support this program. We'll conclude with the voice of Russia. The United States continues to lead the world in the number of people in prison and the highest per capita rate of incarceration in the world. The Voice of Russia.
America is the world's largest economy with the world's mightiest military, but it also is a champion in the world's more dubious ratings as well. The United States, a country with just 5% of the world's population, holds 25% of the world's prisoners. Overall, there are 7.3 million men and women currently under correctional supervision, which are more people than were inside the Gulag system at the peak of Stalinist terror.
Shockingly, one in 100 Americans are now behind bars, many of whom are serving sentences that are much longer than those given for similar crimes in other Western countries. China, which has a population four times larger, has a prison population of only 1.6 million people. The U.S. has 751 people in prison or jail for every 100,000 people in population, compared to England's 151 and Germany's 88.
There are many explanations for the U.S.'s extraordinary high incarceration rate. Some say it's the higher levels of violent crime than in, say, Europe, tougher sentencing laws, stronger efforts to combat illegal drugs, U.S.'s judgmental mentality, and even the lack of a social safety net, which drives people into the world of crime.
Others say that racial prejudices and inequality has something to do with it, as over half of all black men without a high school diploma go to prison at some point in time in their lives. According to the New York Times, there are more black men inside the criminal justice system today than there were in slavery in 1850. Adding to these statistics is a fivefold increase in the numbers of undocumented immigrants jailed in detention centers over the past 15 years.
Vivian Stern, a research fellow at the Prison Studies Center in London, said the American incarceration rate has made the United States a rogue state, a country that has made a decision not to follow what is normal Western approach. Meanwhile, James Whitman, a specialist in comparative law at Yale, wrote that, far from serving as a model for the world, contemporary America is viewed with horror.
The U.S.'s incarceration rate first shot upwards towards its current gargantuan proportions in the late 1970s, coinciding with the nationwide movement to get tough on crime. Still, in 1980, there were about 220 people incarcerated for every 100,000 Americans. By 2010, the number had more than tripled. Paradoxically, although the U.S. has a higher murder rate than many other Western nations, it has relatively low rates of nonviolent crime. For example, burglary and robbery rates are higher in Australia, Canada, and England.
However, a U.S. judge is likely to give a robber or a burglar a much longer sentence than an Australian or a Canadian judge would. Burglars in the United States serve an average of 16 months in prison, compared with 5 months in Canada and 7 months in England. America is also the only advanced country that incarcerates people for minor property crimes, such as passing bed checks.
The expansion and severity of the American gulag could have a much more cynical explanation than the U.S.'s fervency in fighting crime and injustice. Many argue that the private prison companies that profit from the booming prison population also do everything to ensure that their industry thrives. According to Banking on Bondage, Private Prisons and Mass Incarceration, a report by the American Civil Liberties Union cited by Al Jazeera, today, for-profit companies are responsible for approximately 6% of state prisoners and 16% of federal prisoners.
These companies have a vested interest in putting more people in prison and keeping them there for longer. And they spend a lot of money on state and national campaigns, lobbying legislators and participating in influential conservative political organizations to influence policies and practices that land criminals behind bars.
And the market share that these private prison companies are enjoying is growing every year. Over the past three decades, while the number of prisoners in the U.S. increased by 17%, the population inside the walls of fully privatized prisons soared by 80%, and with that, so did their profits. In 2010, the two largest private prison companies alone received nearly $3 billion in revenue.
That report was from the Voice of Russia. Russia is now heard from 6 p.m. to 10 at 12030-13665, 9840, or through their website english.ruvr.ru. All the times I've announced are for Pacific Standard Time. Please adjust them to your time zone. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people to listen to international broadcasts using a shortwave radio at home. Or, if you use the internet, listening globally is also quite easy. See the links at this program's website. Every Friday morning, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's www.outfarpress.com. Thanks to Mike for fixing up the looks of the Outfar Press website. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find internet links for international broadcasters, make a safe donation through PayPal, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report is free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.